Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Shmos Shvi, the seventh Aliyah in Parshas Shmos. Our Aliyah is 24 Psukim, running from Perek Hey Aleph to Vav Aleph, and the topic is the punishment for thinking. So Moshe Rabbeinu, then after convincing the elders and the Hebrews there who believe in him, believe in the mission, they come to Pharaoh and they say, so says the God of Israel, Shalach Esami, send forth my nation, V'yachogeli b'mimbar, that they celebrate the meal for me in the desert. Pharaoh's answer is, "Miyashem Asher Shema Bekolai v'Chilayishlach Israel." Who's this God you're talking about to send him out? I don't know who he is, and I'm not sending them. So I said to him, "The God of the Hebrews called upon us, and they asked to go to the desert for this celebration. And we need. There's a concern that there might be violence, there might be a plague if this does not happen." So the king of Israel says, "Why are you disturbing these people with these ideas? You just go back to your work. Just." Pick up your bundles and start making bricks again. So Pharaoh therefore issues a new edict, and he says to his Nogsim, to his foreman on the job sites, he says, you tell the police in the following: they're no longer going to receive the supplies. They're not going to get the tevan, the straw necessary to make the bricks, but they have to carry on gathering the straw, and that we will not detract from the quota. They're going to have to carry on with the quota of what they did up till now. And the reason why this is because they're near Pim. They're just like, you know, they're calling out because they want to go for these celebrations. That obviously means they've got too much time on their hands, so let's make it a little more difficult. They're no longer going to have that time as well. And that's what ends up happening. But the Vayuku Shotrei B'nei Israel, the policemen of the children of Israel, were hit. And those are the ones that were placed overseeing them. And they come to Pharaoh and they say, well, what's going on? What's all this happening? So you're asking for the same amount, but you're not giving the supplies. What's happening? So he says, oh, well, you know, it's because the Moses. He said that you want to go sacrifice. That's not all right. So it says that Vayefku'u es Moshe va'Aaron, and so him across some, they come and meet Moses and Aaron, Moshe and Aaron, and they as they leave Pharaoh, and they say, Yerah, Hashem should judge you. You've now dried up our spirits. We are now being killed. You gave us the Pharaoh a sword to kill us. And Moshe turns to Hashem and he says, Hashem, why did you do so bad to the people? Why did you even send me? Because now since you sent me, it hasn't improved things. It's made things worse. And Hashem ends with the following words, the end of the parasha: you should know, Moshe, atatira, and now you'll see. Asher said to Pharaoh, right now you'll see what I'm going to do, Pharaoh, because I'm going to send out the nation of Israel. A lot of questions to ask. First question is does Pharaoh really not know who Hashem is? This is me, Hashem, Asher Shema B'Kolai. So, Orach HaMakodesh says, yeah, he's not questioning the existence of God. He rather the absolute power of God. So he says, look, there's lots of gods, and there's the rain god, and there's this river god, and there's there's all kinds of different gods. But he's part of the pantheon. You know, let him join the troops. And you may have a nice, powerful God, and I've got many other gods. But why should I listen to your God over others? In fact, this is going to be one of the difficulties of all the Makos. The whole program is not therefore to prove power, because any power can be attributed to having a very powerful God. But doesn't display that there's a overseeing God who's in charge of all other powers in the world. That requires just a demonstration of total control and precision. That's what the Makos are going to have to be just demonstrating, not just power, because any God has power, at least in the mind of Pharaoh. Rabbeinu Bachai actually quotes a Medrash in a Chazal which says that Pharaoh, when he was confronted with this request, he opens up his Diftero Shel HaLokos. He has, like, you know, he has a binder there. He's got Eliyahu looks through, and he says, you know, here's the gods of Midian, and here's the gods of Moab, and here's the gods of Ammon. I just don't see this God. Like, can you just spell his name carefully for me, please? And he doesn't know where he gets this from. So the Moshe and Aaron say to him, well, listen, you got the wrong idea. This God, Yudke Vavke, Hashem, is above all other gods as well. The example Rabbi Mechaya gives is a very beautiful example. He says, imagine you had a priest who has a slave, a servant, and the priest goes out of the country, leaves, and the servant hasn't found him for a long time. So he goes looking for him, so he crosses the border, he goes out there, and he comes to a cemetery. He's in the cemetery, he's looking all around, and one of the foremen comes over to him and says, who are you looking for? He says, I'm looking for my master, the priest. They say to him, don't you know, priests never go to cemeteries. There's no priests over here. And what the idea of that is quite simple. The way that Rabbeinu Bachai explains the nimshal is that Moshe and Aaron are coming to this cemetery essentially, and they're saying, and they say, well, look, there's this God, And Pharaoh says, I don't see the God. And the answer is, yeah, because he's in the cemetery. He's in this place of so much sorcery, so much materialism, so a place which is so absent of real monotheistic ideas and religion. That's why you can't see him. But that's not a function of the fact that he doesn't exist. That's a function of how dark a place this is. That's what the conversation is as it goes on over here. Now, what's Pharaoh's plan over here? What is Pharaoh's game at taking away the straw? So the Emes Liakor, Yaakov Kamenetsky, at the beginning of Parshas Va'era, makes a very beautiful comment, and that is, he says that, oh, beforehand, because they had a little more extra time, they would have a day off, and that day off, you spend reading scrolls, which would give them hope. That's a chazal that he's quoting. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says, well, what scrolls were they reading exactly? Like, what print media did they have in those days on the papyrus? So he says, well, they did have actually some Hebrew teachings, some ideas that were extant already there. For instance, some of the Mizmorei Tehillim were already around. We know some of the authors were Avram Avinu. Some of them was Adam Rishon, as an example. Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbos, the psalm said on the day of Sabbath, is attributed to Adam Rishon. The book of Iyov is extant. If you look at all of those Mizmorim, at those early Mizmorim, which they could have had extant at that point in time, they're all on the topic of theodicy, which is justice, evil, and monotheism in a world which has complexity and evil. Why is that relevant? Because beforehand, when they had the space, when they had the time to read, when they had the time to think about ideas, it was at that time they could contemplate the theodicy of the situation and survive. The way that Nietzsche puts it is, Friedrich Nietzsche says, if a person has any why, they can survive almost anyhow. What Pharaoh was trying to do was take away the why. He was trying to take away the ideas. When you don't have ideas and you can't survive, then at a certain point, your back just breaks. That was what Pharaoh was trying to do by taking away the time they had to reflect and to think. Now, what was the timeline precisely over here? So Maharal actually points out an interesting thing based on the Mishmois Rabbah, the Maharal to be found in Gvuras Hashem, his commentary on Pesach in Perek Lamed, where he says that Moshe Rabbeinu first came and made their presentation to Pharaoh, and after which Moshe Rabbeinu had to return to Midian to bring back his wife at Aaron's suggestion, bring back his wife and children, and come back. And it was at the end of this period of time, it was actually a six-month period of time, Moshe and Aaron have now come back together. They're now reassessing the situation, at which point we now have this delegation walking out of these Hebrews walking out of the halls of Pharaoh, and that's when they encounter them in this, so to speak, this episode where they all meet each other, and that this is the point when it all comes to bear. And who are these Jewish policemen precisely? So Rashi says that these were the taskmasters, the Egyptian taskmasters, but they had underneath them Jewish taskmasters. And the Jewish taskmasters had the unenviable task of arranging and getting the quotas of bricks produced and all the tasks done. And they were the ones who took the beating, meaning to say that when Israel was not able to produce this physically impossible criteria, to produce the same amount as before, they took the beating. And it was because of this, Rashi says, quoting the Midrash in Shmos Rabbah, that they became the later on the Sanhedrin, Eswali Ish Shivim Ish Mizikne Yisrael, in Parshas Baalosra. These were the people who, because of their sacrifice for their brethren, were the ones who are going to be the leaders. And perhaps one of the prerequisites of leadership of the nation of Israel is caring for the nation of Israel. Now, just another couple of questions. Number one is, who was Moshe and Aaron? Who do they meet? Who are these people in Netzavim? So if you look at the pronouns, it seems to suggest that it was the policemen who were the ones who met them. But Rashi and many of the Mephoshim point out that the policemen, the Jewish policemen, were actually really good people. So they weren't the ones challenging Moshe Rabbeinu. Rather, it was others. Chazal attributed to Dasan and Aviron. Once again, they seem to pop up whenever there is a question of disbelief of leadership. And they are the ones who are questioning Moshe Rabbeinu. Finally, one last question is, how did Moshe falter? How could Moshe Rabbeinu, who's been convinced by Kadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to save the nation of Israel, how could it be that he's going to falter and say this whole and question HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan over here? Suggest the Me'ah Shiloch, the Ishbitz Rebbe, because it comes down to Moshe Rabbeinu's, one of Moshe Rabbeinu's hallmark attributes, and that was he was an Ohev Yisrael. He was a lover of the nation of Israel, and it to him was too painful to witness their suffering, even if it was going to be for the Makos, even if it was going to be for the plan which was unfolding, even if it was going to be a longer and continuous plan which was unfolding, it was too much of a cost for Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Maharal concludes by saying that perhaps that's how Hashem does Geula. Geula is pokoid pokarati. That was the secret words. I'm going to surely redeem you. The double lashon, the double expression, is because it comes in different stages. And what Moshe Rabbeinu is learning, what the nation of Israel needs to learn, is that Geula doesn't work out neatly. It doesn't work out in a linear fashion. It comes in stages. And that's the way how the speech is going to continue in Parashas Va'era. With this, we conclude the last Aliyah and Shmois and the Parashah itself. Have a wonderful and meaningful day and a fabulous Shabbat.